Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, all of it brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Please stop spending a fortune on the gimmicky shave tech that you don't need. Make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. Get your first month for only $5 with free shipping by going to dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Jim, let's start with our good martini, and that relates to the ongoing saga of, will President Trump fire Attorney General Jeff Sessions, or will he not fire Attorney General Jeff Sessions? But the good news today is that a lot of conservatives and one particular Republican who has a lot of power are taking the side of Jeff Sessions here. Politico talks a little bit today about the number of people standing up publicly for Sessions. Most strongly, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, quote, "He's trying to get Sessions to quit, and I hope Sessions doesn't quit. If the president wants to fire him, fire him." Further on, it says, numerous prominent conservative voices have publicly rallied to Sessions' side, including former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, former Senator Jim DeMint, former Trump transition domestic policy chief, and Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell, and Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. However, the most important statement coming from Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, the longtime Republican senator from Iowa, he's making it very clear in a tweet from Wednesday night that if Trump thinks he's going to get the Judiciary Committee to consider another attorney general nominee, not going to happen this year. Quote, "Everybody in D.C. should be warned that the agenda for the Judiciary Committee is set for rest of 2017. Judges first, sub-cabinet second, AG, no way." So that, of course, will fuel speculation of a possible recess appointment, potentially, Jim. But what do you make of Grassley putting the foot down that strongly?
I was going to say, you know, it's very rare you see the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman say, look, we just don't have time for that. we're busy. We got all that stuff going on. We'd have to wait till early 2018 to confirm anybody. Heaven forbid Jeff Sessions were to resign, or Jeff Sessions has a heart attack or something like that, and the country needed another attorney general. You know, the deputy would step in and act as perform as acting attorney general for the time period. But, you know, if there was a legitimate reason to replace the attorney general, then yes, the Senate Judiciary Committee would clear its schedule and get some qualified nominee in there as quickly as possible. This is Chuck Grassley, not known as a bomb thrower, a little bit of a, you know, wicked wit and sense of humor, but generally not a guy who's going to run around throwing punches, literal or metaphorical. This is him basically tossing it high and inside to the Trump administration, saying, look, I don't want to deal with this. Right? I've seen no reason to get rid of Jeff Sessions. He seems fine. And if you want to get a replacement, it's got to go through my committee. And I just don't want to deal with it right now. I'm just talk to the hand. That is the subtext of that one. Also, as we are preparing for this podcast, Greg, Lindsey Graham has said, quote, any effort to go after Mueller could be the beginning of the end of the Trump presidency. Obviously, the thinking is that getting rid of Sessions is a step to get rid of FBI Director Mueller. The plan, you know, that Sessions has recused himself, and so he can't have any say in it. You get rid of Sessions, you bring in a new attorney general. That attorney general could fire Mueller. Alternately, Trump could ask Rosenstein. Rosenstein could say, no, I'm not going to do so. He could fire Rosenstein. And then you just keep going down the chain of command until you find somebody who's willing to do what Trump does. This is, you know, disturbingly similar to the Saturday Night Massacre, and generally not a path that most White Houses want to go down. It's pretty clear, apparently, in the Wall Street Journal today, apparently Trump's friends and everyone in the White House is telling him, stop antagonizing your attorney general publicly. And surprise, surprise, Trump is not taking advice from anyone else. But I think Grassley's, you know, hey, look, we just don't have time, is a creative and unique way of saying to the president, this is a bad idea. And hopefully this will discourage this line of thought and action from the president.
Jim, I also read that apparently Trump's frustration with Jeff Sessions peaked over the weekend, and now it's ebbed a little bit. And so there's hopes in the West Wing that there will be an uneasy detente, because that's, of course, the relationship you want between the president and the attorney general. And of course, since things have been easing over the past 2 or 3 days, I'm sure there won't be a mood swing in the opposite direction. So
do we have soap opera music we can insert here? as the world turns in the Trump administration.
Oh, that was a good martini. Let's move on to the bad martini now. And in case you haven't noticed, the effort to find 50 plus one votes to get anything done on health care has been a little rough in the Senate. They did pass the motion to proceed, but everything since then has pretty much been shot down. On Tuesday night, it was the amended comprehensive repeal and replace bill that the Senate never voted on until now, and it lost pretty badly, 57 to 43, because 9 Republicans went against it. Then on Wednesday, it was the repeat of the 2015 repeal plan without a replacement attached to it. And Jim, we knew this wasn't going to pass because 4 different Republicans last week said they wouldn't vote for it, and that was Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Shelley Moore Capito, and Rob Portman. Turns out there's 3 more turncoats who voted for this in 2015 and won't vote for it now. That's Dean Heller of Nevada, John McCain of Arizona, and Lamar, Alexander, of Tennessee. That was his slogan back in 1996 when he ran for president, Lamar with the exclamation point, for those who don't remember. So, Jim, Susan Collins is the only one who's got any street cred here. She's been wrong now and then. Now there's 6 other Republicans who thought it was a really cool thing to do when they knew Obama was going to veto this back in 2015, but they can't do it now when it actually has a chance of passage. And if that weren't enough, former House Majority Leader Eric Cantor admitted in an interview with the Washingtonian that promising the American people that Republicans would repeal Obamacare was just a lot of bluster. He says, to give the impression that if Republicans were in control of the House and Senate that we could do that when Obama was still in office, his voice trails off and he shakes his head. I never believed it. And then when he went on to say, if you've got that anger working for you, you're going to let it be. It's amazing why people are so frustrated with politicians, right, left, and center, and the base has just got to be pulling its hair out right now.
Do you think Dave Brott read that and started strutting around the office saying, see, I told you so? I had always felt like the case against Cantor was overstated, that he had a typical job trying to keep the House caucus together. That because he was a fairly even-keeled, soft-spoken guy, that he was, perceived to be more moderate than he is. But a quote like this really is devastating, and it really does make you think of these guys who were, you can't criticize the president or Obama or anybody else for promising the moon and failing to deliver when you're willing to do the exact same thing in order to win support. If Republicans had always felt like, look, Obamacare expanded Medicaid, this expansion is popular, we don't want to be in a situation of having somebody who has signed up for Medicaid and then saying a few years later, we're taking it away from you, you're out, good luck finding your own health insurance. If they really felt that way, and I don't think it's an unreasonable position, that basically, effectively, the government has made a promise and then you suddenly find yourself in a situation where your government is breaking that promise, then fine, you can have that. But say that on the campaign trail, right? Admit that I'm going to repeal Obamacare, but we're going to keep the people who are in the expanded Medicaid as is. We're going to grandfather them in or something like that. And maybe that's not a great rallying cry. Maybe that doesn't get people fired up. Ah, we're going to repeal completely, 100%, every last word. Yeah! That people love that idea. But then once you actually start putting into practice, all of a sudden it sounds less appealing, or there are consequences that you weren't really willing to talk about on the campaign trail. Well, guys, the rubber has met the road. Now you're in reality, and you can't suddenly say, well, when we said repeal and replace or repeal it completely, what we really meant was we're just going to lower the tax on Medicaid devices. Now the argument is skinny repeal, also known as diet repeal zero. It's got half the calories of other repeal proposals. The skinny repeal, you want to talk about bare bones, because it gets rid of the medical device tax. It gets rid of the mandate, which obviously a lot of Republicans grumble about. Insurers hate it because basically they say, look, they tried something like this in a couple of states and this ended in disaster because nobody bought it and they only bought health insurance once they were sick. So you really, the argument from health insurance companies is, look, you can't have the mandate requirement that we cover pre-existing conditions and no mandate. And it looks like the attitude of Republicans is going to be, well, we want to do it this way, so you guys figure out how to make that work. I think there's a chance of higher premiums from this, which is one of the main reasons people are so upset about Obamacare, And one of the reasons, well, one of the big promises that Trump and other Republicans had made. So skinny repeal really would look like the absolute bare bones version of repeal, deeply dissatisfying to a lot of conservatives, not really getting us significantly towards a more market-based or a smaller government role in the healthcare system. Look, based on this most recent vote, I think it's safe to say Republican, at least a small minority of Republican senators, are comfortable with the government's role in health, the healthcare system, and have no serious interest in reducing it.
Yeah, according to Politico's headcount, even the skinny repeal is not bound to pass, at least at this point. I'm a little surprised that the Republicans haven't been accused of body-shaming repeal efforts by referring to it as skinny. I mean, who are they to say that it's, you know, too thin? But when it comes to the components here, I think the insurance companies, who I normally castigate in this situation because they're a huge reason for the fact that we have Obamacare now, they're probably right in the sense that if you end the individual mandate, then the people who aren't sick, namely young people who no longer have to buy it, they're going to be out of the marketplace, and then that's going to raise premiums for everyone else. But we'll see. Employers would love it. Of course, getting rid of the employer mandate would be great, and on principle, getting rid of the individual mandate is great. It's fun to watch people say if you repeal the individual mandate and don't force people to buy health coverage, 16 million people are going to lose their coverage. Yeah, because they don't want it.
Yeah, because you're no longer forcing them at, you know, not quite at gunpoint, but under potential tax penalty to buy it. Nonetheless, I don't know about you, Greg. I was really frustrated that the vote wasn't closer, that we had so many Republicans defecting, and I think it was fair for us to expect a close shave.
Do tell.
Yeah, because, you know, when it comes to close shaves, Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice. You will get a great, super close shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door. It is a no-brainer. You no longer have to schlep to the store to buy a cheap disposable razor that gives you a cheap shave. Or spend a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech you don't need. Now, I mentioned this earlier in the week. The box from Dollar Shave Club was on my desk. Mrs. Campaign Spot says, "What's this?" I said, "Oh, this is from Dollar Shave Club." She opens it up. She sees the razor, the shave butter, and she's like, "Oh, my goodness, this is really nice." I'm like, "Yes, yes, it is. We have nothing but the finest sponsors on the Three Martini Lunch."
Of course.
So I go, I do it. She comes back. She's very impressed with the cheek and chins and above my lip. I won't say what happened next, but basically she was very impressed. So if you want to impress the lady in your life, maybe you want to take a look at Dollar Shave Club, because it's a smarter choice.
A very smart choice, apparently. Now listeners to Three Martini Lunch can make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of the Dr. Carver's Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. And after that, razors are just a few bucks a month. That's a $15 value for only $5 to get started. In your first month's box, you get an awesome weighty handle, none of those cheap disposable kinds, a full cassette of four cartridges, and a tube of their shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at the regular price. $1 a blade, in case you couldn't tell from the name of the company. There are no hidden fees and no commitments. That's the kind of club I like to join. You got to join the club, but you can get out anytime you want with no fees, no commitments. Cancel anytime you like. You can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Jim, we certainly live in a interesting era in American history. I don't know how folks will look back at this. Maybe it'll get worse and this will seem like really good times. The instant reaction to Sean Spicer resigning as White House press secretary has led to a number of things that sadly have become predictable. This is courtesy of the New York Post and then Ala Pundit over at Hot Air. First, the New York Post. Spicer, who announced his resignation Friday, was seen coming out of high-level meetings at ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox News in Manhattan, according to sources. A source told us some news execs made the full court press as they competed to woo the high-profile spokesman who brought in solid ratings and plenty of late-night fodder, while others just kicked the tires. But there's also speculation 45-year-old Spicer's next stop could be showing off some spicy dance moves on ABC's Dancing with the Stars. Actor Zach Braff jokingly tweeted when Spicer stepped down, quote, "Can't wait to see Sean Spicer waltz on Dancing with the Stars." But a TV insider confirmed to Page Six that the dancing competition show has indeed reached out to the Beltway insider, quote unquote, that has legs, the source said. Now to Ala Pundit, who has offered three possibilities as to how this ends if, in fact, Spicer joins the cast for the upcoming season. One, Spicer advances to the finals and Trump shows up as a surprise guest, promising to reinstate him and finally get him that audience with the Pope he wanted, if he wins. Spicer then faceplants on his final move. Two, Spicer flames out badly in the first round. Trump then tweets afterward that he looked fat in his outfit and the episode's ratings sucked. Three, Spicer trains hard but is badly overshadowed by the other contestants, Jim Mattis, Rex Tillerson, Reince Priebus, James Comey, Mike Flynn, and other administration cast-offs, of whom there should be enough by fall to staff an entire season of the show. So, Jim, we've seen Rick Perry there. We've seen Tom DeLay there. I'm sure we've seen other political figures there that don't come to mind right now. What do you think of this being the next career move for Sean Spicer?
Look, Greg, under the Constitution, if you come in second in Dancing with the Stars, you become Secretary of Energy. That's precedent. That's right there. That's how Rick Perry ended up getting the job. So Spicer could very well end up returning to the administration. I also love the quote from this unnamed source, that has legs. Could be referring to the story. Could be referring to Sean Spicer. He can dance. He's got legs. The other thing is, so do you know who was a contestant on the very first season of Dancing with the Stars? In fact, I believe was the first person ever knocked off in Dancing with the Stars.
I don't know.
Tucker Carlson.
Really? I did know that he was on there. I didn't know he was the first casualty, though.
And I, you know, it's you go back and forth between people like to put the gif of Rick Perry dancing kind of awkwardly and looking kind of silly. I myself do not think we should really give people too much mockery for competing on the show. And it's not just because I am a bad dancer and shouldn't, if you live in a glass house, you shouldn't throw stones. Obviously, this is done for charity. This is done for laughs. This is done for fun. So obviously, if he chooses to do this, God bless him. And you know, I think the weirdness factor is starting to wear off of seeing somebody in politics. I do believe there was some year not that long ago where they had Marla Maples, the second wife of the president, on there. Uh-huh. Geraldo Rivera, but it was a very Trump-centric cast about a year or two ago. And as far as we know, only one person has gone from Dancing with the Stars to a presidential cabinet. So far.
Amazing. Jim, we'll call time there. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our good friends at Dollar Shave Club. Get the $15 in value with the shave butter, the executive razor, and the great handle. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. And tune in Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.